Thank you for hosting.
Our pleasure.
Just to see a lot of bracha and simcha nachas in this house and
Amen.
Every other house.
Amen.
So last time we met, we discussed, came up pretty often, the issur of molid and nolad. We spoke about different concepts of creating new entities. We spoke about whipped cream and things of the sort. So let's go through that topic of what's called molid and nolad. It's very important to know the distinction. Molid is the diktuk of molid is to create something new, and nolad is more passive. It's where something is created, where the person isn't the one creating any action, but on its own it turns into a new entity. I'll explain what that means. But
do
molid,
they have the same root?
Yes, they're both from the word yelad or yalad, to give birth. Molid is more proactive. Molid, I'm creating the change. I'm creating, let's say, the whipped cream. I'm crushing the ice into water. And nolad is left, say, leaving ice out, and it just on its own melts. So it's nolad, it's happening, it's changing form, but I'm not the one creating that form. So molad is a proactive action, and nolad is passive. So there's a very important distinction to note, molad versus nolad. So the Gemara says that one is not allowed to crush ice on Shabbos. If you crush ice on Shabbos, you turn the ice into water, and that's what's called molad. You're changing the form from ice, from a solid, into water. And the reason that's usher is because it's similar to doing a malacha. Just like you can't create something on Shabbos, you can't draw on Shabbos, you can't bake, you can't cook. So changing a form from a solid to a liquid is also some level of changing forms, and it's usur midrabanan to be molded, to crush ice and making it into water. So now that leads to a number of other examples. So are you allowed to, let's say, walk on snow on Shabbos? Because walking on snow would also, by you pressing, crushing it, it turns into water eventually, or maybe turns into ice, maybe a harder substance than the snow. So the halach is that one is allowed to walk on snow on Shabbos, even though it's changing form. And the reason is because, firstly, that's not your intention. You have no interest in turning it into the water or ice that it becomes. And secondly, it's impossible. How else are you supposed to get from your house to the shul or to your friends? So since it's impossible and it's not your intention, so walking on snow is certainly permitted. But what about melting ice? Let's say you come out, you wake up in the morning, and it's snowed or it's icy. Are you allowed to shake ice on top of salt on top of the ice on Shabbos? That's a big question. And the answer is that if it's a situation where there's a concern of someone, it's dangerous. Someone might slip, and anyone could slip no matter how old or young you are. So therefore, one is allowed to and probably should put salt on ice on Shabbos to avoid anyone from slipping and chas v'shalom getting hurt. So what about breaking ice? Let's say oftentimes after you've shoveled a couple of days and it gets cold that night and everything freezes over. So the salt, you have, you know, company coming over. The salt's not going to melt anything in time. I start chopping the ice away and to break it to make a clear path. So this is actually a problem. One is not allowed to break the ice that's on the ground. And the reason is because when ice is attached to the ground, there's another problem here. The other problem is not that you're changing form from ice to water, but anything that's attached to the ground, it's called sosa. You can't destroy anything attached to the ground. So let's say Lego. Lego is not attached to the ground. I could build, I could destroy Lego. But when something's attached to the ground, for me to knock down a wall, that's a problem of sosa. It's a problem of destroying. So therefore, since ice has frozen over onto the ground, it becomes part of the ground. And by me chopping that ice, that's actually destroying it. That's a violation of soser, destruction, and that is not allowed on Shabbos. If someone really is really dangerous and the ice isn't going, rather the salt is not going to be effective, the best you could do is ask a non-Jew, if you can, to break it for you. There would be a reason, even though normally you can't tell non-Jews to do mulach on your behalf. I can't have a non-Jew turn the light on for me. In a case of a shvus de shvus, which means, if the breaking of a ice is only an isser midrabanan, why is an isser midrabanan? There's 39 malachas. One of the malachas is to destroy. But the malacha of destroying is only destroying in order to rebuild. So if I were to knock down my house on intention to rebuild it, that's what's called soser almanas livnos. I'm destroying with the intention of building. If I'm simply destroying something without any intention of building, that's usher only on a dirabanan level. So I could tell a non-Jew, shvus, speaking to a non-Jew to do malach is one shvus, to do another malach of destroying, which is only dirabanan, that's shvus the shvus b'makom mitzvah, in the place of a mitzvah, or of a situation of a sakana, a danger, you would be able to tell a non-Jew to do an iser midrabanan in a situation of a sakana. But you cannot do it yourself, breaking that ice, because again, the ice is attached to the ground. The best you could do on your own is to salt it up. Now, we discussed last week, what about using whipped cream? Would whipped cream be permitted? I know some people were not so excited about that discussion, but many, many poskim hold.
Before you get to the whipped cream,
sure.
What if it's snowing, can you shovel it?
Could you shovel it? So if you need, you can shovel it. There's a whole discussion whether or not snow is considered muktzah or not. That's a whole debate. Some say yes, some say not. But we say if you really, really need to, you can, if it's dangerous. I always found that it's actually safer to walk through the snow than it is to shovel it, because then when you shovel it, whatever's left on the bottom is ice, that's actually more dangerous. So I think it's better just to walk through. And even though you're making footprints in the snow, which might come off as ksiva, writing, if you will, that's not a problem with stepping through the snow.
And the shovel is not muktzah?
The shovel itself is not muktzah, because you're using... You can use tools. So, for example, a hammer. You can use a hammer, but if I'm using a hammer to do something permitted, like to crack open a nut, so I could use the hammer to crack open the nut. If there is no purpose, then the hammer's muktzah. So if I'm using the shovel for a permitted use,
then it's not muktzah.
Exactly. Now, it's also, the other difficulty with shoveling is it's not in the spirit of Shabbos.
Right.
To sweat and to do that effort. So only if there's really a great danger. But I really don't think there's a great danger. I think it's better off, it's safer not to shovel.
Going back to tools, I apologize. Only, you're speaking tools like in the actual, like a hammer or a shovel. What about kitchen tools like a masher or a garlic presser?
Right. So this is obviously a whole other discussion, but just anything that kli that's miyuchad. No, it's fine. Any utensil that has a specific use for something that's a malach on Shabbos, so a masher, you can't use a masher on Shabbos. That's the only...
Like a garlic presser, a can opener...
Right, so again, each utensil depends what is the main use of it. And sometimes even something like a masher, if you could find a heter use, a permitted use, you might be able to. But we have to go through...
If I were using the masher to move snow out of the way, then that's okay.
I'm not sure.
The masher to mash a potato, I can't use.
It's a good question. I don't know about the masher because no one ever does that.
I know.
The hammer...
Right. I think that. And cauliflower, and sure, you need the masher.
Right, but not for moving the snow, I don't think.
That's an extreme example.
Right. So it has to be something that's really in the realm of, and that spectrum of one would use. Now, no one here uses a hammer to crack open a nut, but during the times of the Gemara, they would use a hammer to open a nut. That was what they had.
Yeah. Use a small hammer to open a coconut.
Yeah? Yeah. I've never opened a coconut before.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah?
Yes.
That's how you do it?
Yes.
Wow. Interesting.
My father still uses a hammer to open them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay, so people still use it. I don't eat nuts. I don't know. But
what about a can opener?
Yeah, the can opener.
That's like a very common...
Yeah, so the can opener is something that you can use on Shabbos. You have to just be careful when you draining the tuna fish oil or water, whatever you use. That's a whole nother discussion. But exactly.
And you have to open the bottom of the can.
Exactly. That's a whole nother discussion, how to open things.
Yeah, but then you're not supposed to, because then you have it clean, you made a vessel, and then you have to puncture a hole in it. Yeah. I tried doing that, and was pushed right through my...
But if you have the kavana that you're going to throw the can away, and you actually throw the can away after you put the corn... Do you have to make the hole underneath?
So I think I sent one of these daily halach. I haven't sent a daily halach in a while. I've been so busy. I did address it. So some say, you know, don't open it up the whole way. You haven't created a utensil. Others say puncture a hole carefully on the bottom so you don't. So when you open it, it's not really a usable hole. But let's say that for a whole other topic. Let's try to stay on this one. I know there's a lot.
Sure. Reminded me of the masher. We can't use a masher, but can we mash something with like a fork or a spoon if you're mashing food for a baby?
Mashing
for egg salad.
So this is again a whole other world. But just to answer the question of mashing, you can't mash food. It's
not
a problem of tochen. But you can do a shinoi. A shinoi would be in this case using the back of a knife or the back of a spoon, which is not normal. That would be permitted.
Also impossible.
What?
Also impossible.
Mash eggs with a
spoon. You can use an egg slicer. I just asked that. You can use an egg slicer. Just keep putting the egg back in until it's like one
piece. That's a good
question. Egg slicer. An egg slicer.
I have
to double check. I don't know about that.
Utensil.
But
can you mash
something with your hand?
Yeah, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's a good idea. They say put plastic gloves on anyway. It's easier to... Wait, can I have a question? Going against this, we have 3-day totem. A lot of Shabbos coming up. We may not open enough cans of tuna before...
Sure, we'll get to that. We'll dedicate another... Not tonight.
Oh, we'll have... Okay, let's take part two. We can do this again before Yom Tov.
Oh, we're gonna do these like
part three?
Year program. We're going to have a lot of...
We're going to need one for the 3-day Yom Tov.
So I think we need to have a list of questions just so we'll go through all them.
Because Rabbi said less. I think it's women. And then like,
so let's keep a paper and just keep it jotting down. We have a running list, and we'll try to get to them by the end of it. I the questions. I still have them. I used whatever were the most common questions. I put them together as the biggest topics. And last time we had so many questions on NOLA, I figured we'd just go through this topic. But you can keep sending them. I'll try to keep a running list of what to address. Okay. Whipped cream. Okay, I guess you guys wanted to avoid that question, huh? So I guess you guys know the answer is to use a whipped cream. Most poskim say using whipped cream on Shabbos from the spray can is a problem because it's a liquid form inside, and when you spray it, you are creating it into a foam. Shake it. So therefore, that foam is considered, according to many, a different consistency than a liquid. I saw some alluded to there are opinions who might permit it, but it seems from what I've seen, it should not be used on Shabbos. I know it makes your dessert not as pretty. You can make...
Is that mousse also like mousse for hair?
I don't know what mousse is inside the bottle. It depends whether it changes.
It has to be liquid, yeah. I think, and then it becomes foamy.
So it depends. Let's jump to a second issue.
No, I asked that, right? Not with that mousse, but if something's liquid, it becomes foamy. I had a really cool soap dispenser that I bought, and I like when it comes out foamy. And someone said, absolutely not.
Okay, so let's address that question. It might relate to the mousse. I don't know how mousse works. It's been many years and I put mousse in my hair. But the the question is also, when you create this foam, how soon does it get back to the niche original liquid? So foam soap, actually, when you put in foam, if you let it sit there, it's pretty quick when it gets back to the liquid form, which means you are allowed to use it actually on Shabbos, what I've seen. And therefore, because it goes back so quickly. Whipped cream remains that way. I don't know if it ever goes back to liquid form once in the whipped cream form. So mousse, I don't know. You could test it out and see if it ever goes back to liquid or not, right?
But I was also told that with the whipped cream, it's also because there happens to be like a star shape. Also because it comes out like it's a shape.
Correct. That's very good. So there is another additional problem it's pointing out here with whipped cream. Since it has a star shape, that falls under the problem of cursive writing. You want a very nice design. So if one does want to use whipped cream, if they think it's not a problem of changing the form, if you knock off one of the stars, cut off one of the triangles, so it won't come out as pretty as you would have otherwise liked it, which just indicates you don't really care how it looks when it comes out, that would be getting around the issue of cursive writing. But you still have to deal with the question of changing form of molid, which again is debatable, but from what I've seen, most are against using whipped cream because of molid.
Let's say you don't really want it for the for the design that it's making. You just want it for like a garnish. You don't really care if it makes a star or whatever.
Right.
Does that keep it like regular? Because then it's going to be ruining the can for after Shabbos.
Right. So that's a great question. But there's a concept of psik reisha de lo nichle. If something's going to happen inevitably, even though I don't really care what the results are, but it's going to happen as that star shape, so then it's going to be usher anyways. It won't ruin the can. If you really clip just one of the little points, it's not going to affect the use of it, and it's a very easy way around it. So again, that gets around the kosei problem. You still have to overcome the other issue of it being molded. Again, that's debatable, but I'm suggesting not to use it. Yes?
I was by someone for Shabbos lunch recently, and I happened to be in the kitchen, and I saw she took the can out, and I said, oh no, dessert please. Because I didn't, it's like, what do you do if...
That's what
but on doing some, right. Was usher. Are you allowed to eat it or not?
Let's put it on the list. That is one of the most complicated topics. No, seriously. Whenever the books farm talk about what happens if someone designed wrong, can you derive hana from it or can you not? Do you have to wait until Shabbos is the only one who did the usher? It's a very complicated topic about what happens. Each case is different. It depends whether it's deraisa, whether it's derabanan. It depends who it was on purpose, it was accidental, it depends who it was done for you or for someone else. There's so many different levels here, so we'll have to say this for another year.
But there's one other question about we never use whipped cream. most of the time, but I'm just curious, like, it does go, it eventually goes back to, like it flattens. So, like, how, what's the time, like, what makes one time okay and one time?
It's a very good question also. There's no real time. When it comes to halacha, there's never anything exact about time. It's just, you know, for an example they give is beer. When you pour beer, it's going to have this foam. Mm-hmm. And that foam eventually goes down. That, everyone agrees, is permitted. So that's, you know, let's say it takes 20 seconds for the foam to go down, so at least 20 seconds is permitted. Now, the extreme case, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10, I don't know what it is. And the poskim made these decisions, they thought that the whipped cream doesn't get back to a liquid form quick enough to be considered. What that shear is, it's a good question.
So if you're talking about, obviously not, but the whipped cream from a can, oh, we used to make whipped cream where you beat it with the beater and you made your own whipped cream.
Right. Yeah, that you could use.
So that's what I'm wondering. I don't know. Okay. That's how we make
right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If you make your whipped cream before Shabbos,
correct.
And you make it before Shabbos, yeah.
For sure.
And it
yeah.
stays.
For sure.
No, no, no. You need your whipped cream done before Shabbos with the
beaters.
For sure.
Yeah.
Can you put it in a piping bag, like a decorating bag?
No. If it has that shape. It's that shape.
Just to address what you brought up about you were at somebody's house. Now, suppose this person's rabbi, like you said, some people say it's okay. So what happens? Her rabbi says it's okay, and you're there for lunch.
Great question. So I'll address this question and then I'll move on, but it's a really good question. But no, seriously.
We're still on this topic.
Like, the, no. The Gemara actually has a story once where a certain Rav invited some other rabbanim over to his house, his sukkah, for Yantif. And they came in, and they were sitting in the sukkah. Now, these visiting Rabbanim, they thought his sukkah was possible. They didn't notice it was possible. I had a certain lenient opinion. And I invited them to my house, and I know they didn't hold of my opinion. But I invited them in, I didn't say a word to them, the Gemara says. The rabbi, the host, didn't say a word to them. So the Rishonim say, from there you see that if you're in my house, you follow my rules. That's how some say. Others say, not necessarily the case. So if there certainly if there is one who to rely on, you certainly don't say anything to the person. You don't want to insult anyone. So it depends on the circumstance. But yeah, there's a concept when you're a person's house or minhag hamakom, if there's a reliable shita to rely on in that house, with a paskin like, so there is room to rely on. But not
like,
always so
like
clear.
I was told like if you are eating by someone who you obviously trust, and you trust that the person is an Reish Shamayim person, and you just, so it's basically, it's like their heshbon. You're eating like everything, the kashrus, it's their heshbon. Like, I think that's why I was wanting to share that, like, very, like a rabbi once said, he said that he would only buy bodek lettuce. He doesn't check lettuce. Not just because because it's like he's going by the cheshbon of bodek, and then if he misses a bag or anything, it's still kosher, because you're right. Going by the hashgacha. So I think that doesn't it like apply also like when you're eating by someone that you rely as a
yeah. There's a concept. What's called it's eid echad neman b'yisurim, which means eid echad, one witness is trusted when it comes to something asur mutter. So if I go to someone's house and he's a firm person, so I can rely on him that any iser, meaning any kosher in his home, is considered kosher. That's certainly true, and everyone has that trust. Now, if you know the person doesn't know much, whatever the case might be, it wasn't raised this way or just wasn't learned, so then that's a whole other story. But the status quo is we trust any person to go eat in their home unless you know otherwise. Now, when it comes to restaurants, people say, so say the same thing by restaurant. He's a firm person, wears a yarmulke, so I could go into any restaurant. What do I need a vod for? When it comes to the world of restaurants, when it comes to people making money, it's a whole other world. We don't trust an eid echad neman b'yisurin unless we know him as being a really trustworthy person. Unfortunately, it's a tough business, and we can't always trust every single restaurant owner. It depends on the case, and that's why we have a
shkiach. Say the first part of what you said about in someone's house, please.
In someone's house, the status quo is every Jew, every firm Jew, it has a concept, it's called Eid Echad, one witness, the woman cooking. She's Neman, she's trusted B'Isrim, in the world of Isser. So we trust the wife who's cooking the food. That's the status quo. If you know otherwise, you know she doesn't know you know your standards, or she doesn't know Shabbos or Kashrus, that's a whole other story. But the status quo is every from Jew, man or woman, is trusted when it comes to the world of Yisroel. That's a status quo, but that can be changed.
So when a rabbi doesn't eat in a congregant's house because he knows that they don't keep it?
No.
No, it could be, no. The reason why a rabbi wouldn't eat sometimes is because sometimes he knows more.
Right.
So if I say yes to this person and no to that person, well, they're going to say, well, obviously I don't trust him. But if also the rabbis also have a life, so it's hard to go to every single person's house for Shabbos and never be home. That's pretty much the reason why at least I don't go out, because we need to be home sometimes. But I don't think it's about not trusting necessarily. Like, sometimes it is, but not always the case. Any questions? Okay.
Can we go
yeah.
to the soap, not the foam soap, but just the
liquid? Sure.
Is there like any leeway with it, or like you must do the?
So I'll explain the pardon me for a second. The liquid soap is as follows. The halach is when it comes to soap. They speak about using a bar of soap on Shabbos. You're not allowed to use a bar of soap because you're mimarechet. You're smoothing it out. Now, they say nowadays our bars of soap already are smooth, so there's no additional smoothing I'm doing to it. Mm-hmm. So they really say using a bar of soap would be permitted nowadays, but the practice is not to use it. So that's already accepted. We don't use bars of soap on Shabbos. Now, liquid soap, Rav Moshe Feinstein was machmir. He thought that no one really gets it, but Rav Moshe Feinstein said it. When you take liquid soap and you rub it, it's not the issue of the foam that's being created necessarily, but there's some level of smoothing out the soap. Even though it's already smooth and it's a liquid, he felt that that was smoothing. So therefore, the advice Rav Moshe says is pour the water on top of the liquid soap, dilute it, and there's nothing to smooth anymore. Just because he thought that that soap is some level of a solid. It's like congealed. It's somewhat of a middle type of form. Many other poskim felt that liquid soap, you can't smooth liquid. Liquid is smooth. There's nothing to smooth about it. So others say you don't need to even do the liquid. So there are who to rely on not having to do that. But from what I've heard is it's best practice if you need to use liquid soap, just to be concerned with Rav Moshe Feinstein Shita, pour some water over the liquid soap first and then rub it together. It's a chumrah, and if you can't do it for whatever reason, you don't have to, but certainly suggest it if you can.
And it's also
you put the soap on your hand, and then you put water.
Exactly.
And then you like,
that's the best. It's stringency, but it's the best thing to do. You might have put this here.
Is it also acceptable to put the water in the container of soap, like the bottle of soap?
Yeah, you could do that also.
How watered down does it need to be?
Not crazy. A little bit of water. You put it on for half a second. It's enough water.
No, like if I fill up my bottle, what if... You know, the bottle is halfway. How much water? Do I just put a drop of water?
Not a drop. Enough that you could see that it's changed.
Enough that you see that there's some sort of change.
Loose, a little looser than
you
usual.
You have to mix it out.
I don't know what happens when you put the water.
If you don't, the thick stays on the bottom.
Okay, so I guess you do.
I have a question.
Yes.
Could you use, let's say you're decorating something. Can you use food coloring?
So food coloring, that's a whole other discussion about tzoveya, it's called dyeing, D-Y, that is. And when it comes to coloring food, we normally say there is no problem of food coloring. You can't color a shirt or anything else. But food coloring, we say, we try to avoid it if possible. It's a chumrah to try to avoid it if possible. That's what we normally suggest. So let's say you want to put grape juice, a mixed grape juice with a seltzer. So the suggestion is... put grape juice first and then put seltzer. Nothing has changed. The grape juice just got a little lighter. But to have seltzer in first and then pour grape juice afterwards, you've now changed the seltzer into purple. That's just a suggestion they have. It's a chumrah, but that's what the poskim say to try to avoid that issue. Fine. So let's, speaking of pouring drinks, so we're still on the topic of molid, of melting ice. So what about pouring soda over ice? So if you want your soda to be cold, so it's better to put the ice in first and then pour the soda in, that gets colder, as opposed to having the soda and dropping ice in the soda, the rest of the soda in the bomb is not going to get cold. So some have such a chumrah, you don't have to hold by this, but some say you should not pour the soda onto the ice, because by doing so, the warm soda is going to melt the ice, and that might be a problem of molid, changing form. Others say it's not going to melt it right away, and it's certainly permitted to pour the ice rather than the soda over the ice.
Did we speak about making ice last time?
No, we'll address that.
Oh, okay.
I hope we'll address that. That's part of the goal, to address it tonight. Hopefully we should have time for that. Okay. So that was all about molded, where you've you've actively created something new.
So you need to put first the ice or first the drink?
So first the drink is advisable. Mm-hmm. Advisable to put the drink in and then the ice afterwards. Some say you don't have to do that. Some say it's enough to put the ice in. You can put the ice first and pour the drink over. I'm not trying to give chumras to everyone here, but if one can, if one's okay with that, first put the soda in and then the ice if you can.
I don't remember where or how or what, but somewhere along the line, I thought I remembered that for like enhancing the beauty of Shabbos, some leniencies and some things can be...
Yeah, certainly true. It depends on what the scenario is.
Right, so I'm asking, like a whipped cream or food dye or something, to consume it on Shabbos. I'm not saying about making something that you're going to eat on Monday night, but you're going to clearly do it, make it for the beauty and enhancement of the Shabbos.
You have to think about the halacha though.
Right, but I thought I learned that there was a little bit of some flexibility for
The flexibility is not when it comes in the face of doing something that's wrong, any halacha.
Right.
If, let's say, what I'm suggesting right now, the pouring of the ice or the soda, which order, which I'm admitting it's a stringency to put the soda in first and then the ice. That's a stringency to do that. If you feel that you don't enjoy a soda without the ice first, you want the ice first and the soda over them, then I tell you, for your own Shabbos, you could put the ice in first. That's not a problem. But in another situation where most poskim say the whipped cream is really a case of molid, you're really changing the form, so that's hard to tell you just because you enjoy the whipped cream to override the iser of molid.
I'm surprised a Jewish businessman did not make a Shabbos-friendly whipped cream.
You never know. Maybe this is your opportunity. Okay. So now it's all molid. About, again, you creating something new. There's a whole other topic which I mentioned before, which is called the nolad, which is where you're not creating the new form, but you're allowing the form to change on its own. So the example I gave just to give you the idea was if I put ice, a bucket of ice on the table, it's ice. I didn't change anything. But over time, it being 72 degrees in here, let's say, so it's slowly going to melt and turn into water. So is that my way of melting the ice? Is that going to be a problem? It's not molded. I'm not crushing it, but I'm allowing it to be nola, to change form on its own. Mm-hmm. So what the halacha is that the... any svardim here?
Basically. Yeah. It's very complicated for me because a lot of the halachas I grew up with, and then... Uh-huh. Now I do differently.
Okay, so I won't tell you what the Sfarim do then. Neither do you then. So the Ashkenazi practice is that we are machmir for nolad, meaning we should not allow a situation of nolad. So we addressed this last week. That's why it came up. If I put some type of food next to the fire and some fat is going to start coming out and ooze out, that's nolad. I'm creating now something new that wasn't before. I had a solid piece of meat and now all the sauce is starting to come out. That's a problem of nolad. So, or we had the situation with the congealed fat, with the oil and fat had congealed in the refrigerator. You put it back on the fire in a way that was permissible. Now it begins to melt away and turns into liquid. That changes form. That would also be a problem of nolad. I'm not changing it. I'm not crushing it or mixing it. I just put it near the fire, and the fire, the room temperature, had melted it. That's a problem of nolad, which should be avoided. So we had said to take the chicken out of the fat, out of the sauce, so there is no issue of any nolad, any of the juice being produced.
Can I ask one question
sure.
about that? So you know the set of gray books, the
Shabbos? Sure, yeah.
So that one, and I always look it up because it always feels wrong to put the chicken. It says, like, the chicken, if it's solid, then you could just put the whole thing on the plata. So, like, how do you know what, like, unless I heard you say this now, then I wouldn't know not to do that because in the gray book it says... to do that. So how do, like, what is the gray book? Is that just like a lenient book?
No. I imagine he addresses it. I think he addresses it. I think so. I think he mentions to take the chicken out of the sauce.
Well, the sauce, but he said that if it's like
if
solid,
there's a little bit
that
of
you
sauce.
Could put it all onto the
if
plug.
What's solid, the chicken or the gel?
The gel. Like, you could take the gel
and
put it onto the
chicken.
Right. Well, we spoke about this last time. If the sauce, if that gel is on the meat or on the chicken, it's okay. But imagine your aluminum pan.
Right.
If that sauce is below the chicken or around the chicken, I think this is what we said, we can't do that. But if that...
But it's below
that
the
gel
is
the chicken,
on
and the gel just, like, stays with the chicken.
In other words, if you put a fork in and you pick up the chicken, whatever comes up with the chicken, it's good to go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which kind exactly. of know what to like follow, because if one, like if this says, he doesn't say shape.
I think they're saying the same thing though.
Yeah, I don't think they're saying anything different.
But he's saying you could just put it on, like with the gel, as long as it's solid.
You mean the whole tray and not even?
He's saying the tray. With as long as it's not liquid, like it's not sauce. It's like the jelly of the chicken.
Yeah, I have to double check. I'm pretty sure he says that's a bit. I could be wrong.
But that's like one that always felt wrong. Like to do so, I always would check before.
Okay, I'll try to double check later what he says. Okay, so now
mine is like full.
Now so, taking out
Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt what you said about the ice. So let's say you're having company for Shabbos and you put out a bucket of ice for soda that maybe you didn't have time to put into the fridge and it's not finished. You know, people use whatever ice they want. So what happens now to what's left in the...
Very good question.
Can you put out ice if you forgot to refrigerate your sodas for your coffee?
Right. So that's a very good question. So the halacha is you are allowed to take out ice from the refrigerator, assuming that there's no automatic ice maker that's going to react to your emptying of the ice. That would be an isser. You can't empty out the ice bucket, the ice tray, and cause the ice maker to work. Ice maker must be off. Now, you can take the ice and put it on the table. You can serve it to everyone else. That's allowed. Because the idea is that they suggest here is if the guests are not going to enjoy the warm soda, so we said again before, nolad to machlok is whether nolad's usr mutter. We Ashkenazim say nolad is usr. But he says, or am I right, if there's a need, you can allow for nolad. So the need would be to bring ice out for the guests to enjoy a cold soda. That would be your own Shabbos case. You can allow the nolad. You can allow the melting to happen. But now to your question, after it's been melted, can you drink that water? Are you allowed to drink that water? So that's a discussion whether that water can be drunk or not afterwards.
You don't have to be mocked to like everybody quickly take the ice before it melts. Not at all. You can leave it out.
Yeah, there is a suggestion to avoid it. Those who are looking for chumras, not that you are looking for chumras, but there is a suggestion that nolad. There are two heterim for nolad. You could allow for something to change form on its own. One heter is if there's a need. The ice. Everyone needs the ice. Number two is let's say you put water at the bottom of the ice bucket. So now when it melts, you don't notice the melting. It just gets, that melting ice dissolves into the water that already exists. So you didn't really create anything new. You just added to the already existing water. So some suggest when you take out the ice, put some water on the bottom.
Yeah, it's a nice little.
And therefore it ends up melting and it solves all your problems of nolad. Now taking out food from the freezer is, if it's not ice, it's just regular food to defrost to be eaten. That's certainly permitted. Now making ice. We discussed making ice. So that is the same debate. By me putting water,
You can defrost frozen food, you said?
Yes, you could defrost.
You can put it on a hot plate if it's frozen?
You could put it on a hot plate in such a way where it cannot get to the point, if there's liquid, it can't get to the point of Yad Salah Dispel. That would be the concern.
If it's solid, you can put it on.
Yeah.
No, but it has to be a solid food.
If it's solid correct. Food, you can put it frozen freezer on a
correct.
Plate. Right,
correct.
It doesn't melt. Yeah.
Okay, so now
but
making ice,
Frozen schnitzels you can put on the
You go take frozen soup as long as it doesn't get to a place where it's going to get the actual leather spell. Now I can take out a frozen soup from my fridge. I could put it even close to the fire if it's far enough that it won't get too hot, as long as it's a little warm.
Soup?
That's nolad. But if I need the soup. Not just to have it watch it melt. If I want to have cold soup, I obviously can't warm it up. I don't know why one would ever do this. But in theory, if you wanted to have cold chicken soup.
That people serve. So, like a fruit soup.
So, if it's frozen and you need it to serve it, so you could take it out, that would be nolad. Let it frost. You could even put it near the fire where it can't boil and let it just defrost till it's edible and then serve.
Can you freeze soup?
So could you freeze soup? So some of the theorem of freezing, if you think it's... Right. So it becomes an issue if you think it's going to spoil or not. So it really won't spoil. Putting in the fridge will really solve the problem of it not spoiling. So you really should put it in the refrigerator Shabbos, Friday night, and then you could put it, Motzei Shabbos, you could put it in the freezer. But to freeze it on Shabbos wouldn't be allowed. That's the next topic. Are you allowed to make ice?
Is it because you can't change the form, or is it because you're preparing for after Shabbos?
Good question. So it's really because you can't change the form.
So if I had my other Friday night leftovers, I can put in the freezer, knowing that I'm going to eat it.
Solid food would not be an issue of freezing. There's no NOLA there by solids.
Right. So you can put it in the fridge and then switch it to the freezer on Shabbos.
That would be
right. Exactly. So you can put it directly into the freezer.
Exactly.
But only for salad.
Right. So I'll explain. Let me explain the background for a second.
That's for NOLA, but what about the idea
So Hachana is you can never prepare for after Shabbos. But if what I'm doing is not preparing, I'm just trying to avoid spoilage. So I could put it somewhere where it's going to be safe. And hold it. So that could either be the refrigerator or the freezer. Either one's fine. Now, what Leah's pointing out, if I put it in the refrigerator and my chicken won't go bad, now I switch it to the freezer, it's not going to help the spoilage. It already was fine in the refrigerator. The only reason why I put it in the fridge from the fridge to the freezer is to save it longer. That would be, again, that would be a chana. That wouldn't be allowed. But for the first time, if I take the chicken, I don't need it anymore, put it directly in the freezer, that's okay, because that's just preventing my spoilage. I just decided to store it in my freezer as opposed to my refrigerator. But with liquid, there's an additional problem of NOLA. I'm changing the form of the chicken soup into ice now. And that's a debate, whether you could do NOLA. I'm not actively making it to ice, but I'm putting it in a position where it will become ice on its own. So that we say you should not make ice unless there's a need. If you see you're having company the next day and you forgot to put ice, so you can make ice Friday night so that it can be ready for your guests the next day. Happens also with kids. Kids like to sometimes make ice pops, orange juice or something, put it in those little plastic things and freeze it. So I wouldn't be mocked if my kids were doing that, because for them, that's their own Shabbos. There's some who say no, it's okay. So for the kids, I would permit it, but they're...
Do you put ice on the freezer?
Yeah. If the kids wanted it, I would let them do it, because it's a machlokas anyways. The kids have a great time doing it. So for the kids, it's okay. But for the adults, unless they really need the ice,
So if you have liquid ices and your kids want to have them for Shabbat, they could put it in the freezer.
Correct. Yeah.
But for an adult to fill up an ice tray, you're saying that's questionable?
Yeah, only if they need it. If they really need it, they'll be embarrassed. They have hot, warm soda they don't want to serve, or they want it to be ice, so then they are able to make the ice on Shabbos.
Because you're going to be using it on Shabbos.
Correct.
Can I put the ices on the freezer?
For the kids? If you think they really enjoy it, you probably can, yeah. You probably can.
Otherwise,
I'll
spill it.
Yeah, I know. Even those packets, like the ready-made ones, the liquid ones, you could put them in the freezer for your kids, right?
Okay, this is a very important one. I do this pretty much every Friday night for my kids and my two youngest boys. Could you put ice in chicken soup, hot chicken soup? Mm-hmm. Is that permitted? So now there are two issues. One is it changing form, right? And then one is changing form. The other one is the issue of bishul. So regarding the issue of nolad, it's not a problem, because I mentioned before, if it dissolves into a ready liquid, so that's certainly fine. So, but what about it being bishul? Are you now cooking the new ice, which in the new water? That's not a problem, because since the soup is a cliché now, perhaps even a cliché, because you have the soup, the pot, ladle is most probably cliché-y, put into a bowl that's cliché-y, and the ice cools it off significantly, there's no way that water is getting to any point of Yad Sledes Bo, so it's permitted to do that and put it in the chicken soup.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, yeah.
Can you walk me through the proper steps of making a tea on Shabbos? Or coffee.
Yeah, we'll put that on the list. We'll put it on the list of,
Because you said the cliche.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to drink tea on Shabbos?
Can you
make tea on Shabbos?
There's two ways to make a tea. So we'll go through. Ramosha has a heter, klishlishi, it's fine. In other words, klishlishi, there's a concept, since you asked it, fine. Two people asked the question. Kali abishal.
It's very important.
It's
the summertime, though.
He's like, making my tea. I'm like, why am I making your tea and you don't make tea? You make me my tea.
So I'll regulate. Right, exactly. The tea essence is the best way to do it, is really having tea essence, which is prepared before Shabbos. That's the best.
Yeah, but that's why they had Lipton tea bags, period. Now you might want cherry tea, and you might want Earl Grey tea. There's like 5,000 different,
Okay, so just those who really need tea, you could certainly rely on Ramosha. Ramosha says as follows. There's a concept called Kale Habisha. Kale means cool, like Kala, a leniency, or something light. Things get cooked very, very easily. So tea bags is an example of Kale Habisha. It could get cooked very easily. So normally we assume that klishlishi, even though it's been removed so many times, it normally does not cook things. But if it's kali abishal, something that gets easily cooked, even a kli shlishi could cook kali abishal. So where Moshe is makel, he's lenient and says that kli shlishi will not cook the tea bags, and that's what he paskins like. So many rely on Moshe Feinstein.
So it's going from the
to a third, exactly. The urn to one cup, that's cliche. In here is cliche.
And
now.
Then the third one.
Wait, the urn is not the first.
That is. Exactly.
That's cliche is in the cup. What if I want to put it in a teapot and then I'm going to pour from the teapot to my cup? Basically, the tea bag has to go in the third time.
Exactly.
So if I want to put a pot, just water in a teapot and serve it at the table, I would have to put my tea bag in my cup.
Correct.
Because that would be the third place.
Correct.
After you put the water.
Exactly.
And someone makes tea on Shabbos and said, and only told me, you know, tear carefully around the letters. She goes, oh, you also have to open another side of the, you know, the tea bag so that it came in, the paper it came in.
Well, I mean, we'll discuss afterwards the bags, but yeah, that's a whole other discussion.
Okay.
I never thought about that, but it makes sense that you should have to just open up the whole way. So it's no longer considered a bag.
Sometimes I'm opening things extra, then I end up ripping more letters.
Right. Yeah. All right, so we'll save it.
No, there are certain brands that have much less writing.
Yogi is better for opening on Shabbos. Which most people say is usher on Shabbos. It's muktzah, but when you're using it so that you don't cut letters on your tea bag, I think it's very helpful.
Okay, so opening tea bags.
Can you use scissors?
Yeah, use scissors.
Yes, I can use scissors to cut my kids' ices, not my teeth. This is big news.
I'm pretty sure. I'll double check. I'm pretty sure you could use scissors on Shabbos. I'll double check that.
I definitely learned it, but it wasn't from you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Wait, what do you have to do?
Two more areas related.
Nobody said anything.
That's great, fantastic. Yeah.
It's
amazing. It's great.
A long time. Sorry.
Okay, let's do two more small topics here. Discuss quickly perfume. Perfume, the Gemara says, spraying perfume on clothing is also a problem of molid. You've now created something new, a piece of cloth that has smell in it. So it's also to spray.
That something new? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's the fact that it's similar.
Is that like the time of the Gemara? Like it was considered a... It's really not something new.
No.
But
now that it has smell to it, because so now you made it a better.
How is it different than applying it to your skin?
So
applying
to skin.
How is that considered something new?
It's now a smelling shirt.
Right.
It's a smelling smell. But the.
You put on perfume and then you take it off.
It can smell for weeks if it doesn't get washed.
Right.
As opposed to the skin, it doesn't last for very long. It can last for a few hours a day.
Skin's
permitted. Spraying in the air is permitted, but not the clothing.
We'll come back to that.
Walking like
the
through that.
Are we coming back to spraying bottles in general?
No, this is a not spraying foam, but spraying smell now.
Right.
In regards to that, it's an interesting question. They talk about if your clothing gets a smell incidentally. They talk about an example, if you carry an esrog, because you're carrying an esrog, it's a sukkah, let's say, and your shirt happens to pick up some of that scent, so that's okay, that wasn't your intention. When you spray it in the air, I imagine your intention to walk through afterwards would be the goal to get the clothing scented, so I don't think that would be okay.
Wait, but you said, I'm sorry,
yeah.
Maybe I misunderstood. You said there were two ways that it's okay, spraying it on your skin directly, and then you said something
in
else.
In the air.
But if you're spraying in the air...
If it gets in you.
It's coming on. Your intention is for it to fall on you.
Oh, it could be just spraying the room, the bathroom.
Oh,
yeah.
Perfume,
yeah.
Okay.
Oh, you mean like
Exactly. That's the case. And we'll do one last point here related to Yom Tov, lighting a candle on Yom Tov. So we know that on Yom Tov you're allowed to, Havara is permitted. Fire, you could turn fires on, but you can't light a new match. Why can't you light a new match? I could raise my flame. So they say, the poskim write, that creating a new flame is molid. You've created something new. In addition to it being a problem of Havara, of burning, you've now created something new. So the poskim say you cannot do molid on Yom Tov. You can't light a strike a new match on Yom Tov, but you can raise an existing flame. That's Havara. Havara is permitted, but not molid. So now comes up, let's say this has happened often. People, let's say their candle went out the second night Yom Tov. What are they supposed to do? Go to your neighbor, try to hold it, the wind goes out, it's crazy. So if you're lucky, you have a non-Jew living in the neighborhood, you can actually have them come over, even though normally you can't have a non-Jew do malacha for you. But since molid is only aser midirabanan, we said. So we said shvus, amir l'akum is aser midirabanan. To do another shvus of lighting the match, b'makom mitzvah, lighting Yom Tov candles. So shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, you can have the non-Jew light a new fire for you, so you could go ahead and light your candles.
So the
non-Jew
could light your...
You ever see those things? One of these? Did everyone know about this, by the way?
No.
I was admiring it.
Firelight.com. It's a teeny tiny flame. It's very safe. And I have to have the oil up to here. It's the Shabbos oil. And it stays lit.
Great.
And you like
what is that?
Lasts for a few weeks, probably. Huh? Lasts for a few weeks, probably. Yeah. Like
so the Shabbos goy could, so a goy could light your candle, your like 2 or 3 day candle.
Exactly.